Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, folks, and welcome to this episode of the FinTech Scaling Show. We're going to be chatting to Hidi today, who's the CEO and co-founder of Bitik. Prior to founding and obviously launching Bitik, Hidi's had a really interesting journey and path to a career path. And this includes obviously founding another business. He's also worked on the trading desk as an energy trader. And interestingly, has had a stint as a coach and a player in a hockey team in Alta Netherlands. So really excited to have you on the show today, Hidi. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Happy to be here.
Cool. Let's dive into this. And just to give everyone a bit of an overview as to what we're going to be discussing today, we're going to be obviously walking into different parts of scaling, but focusing on promotion and communication. And everyone knows, you know me by now, I'm a big fan of communication. Communication is an ingredient that is so important to allow you to move forward and expand, because the opposite of expansion is contraction. And part of communication is making certain you as a founder, a leader, are continuously building affinity with your audience, prospects, and customers. That affinity then creates reality, i.e. you start communicating with them, and then that leads to your continued success towards your ideal scene and that expansion that we want you to have. So let's dive into it today. And let's just maybe take a couple of steps back and ask Hidi, starting out your business, what has fundamentally changed from those that started day zero to right now? What's fundamentally changed for you as a founder and a CEO?
Well, a lot, I have to say. When you start out, of course, it's all about an idea, about a vision, and getting it off the ground. That means every day is legwork. You need to get the people together. You need to get the idea on paper. You need to test it. You need to bring it out to the world. And that means starting, in our case, is talking to customers, trying out proof of concepts, and really being part of literally, you write your emails yourselves, you do your data analysis yourself, and from there on, you start to grow. If you look at where we are now, and as a B2B enterprise SaaS, it's much more about how do we get the product across, how do we sell this into larger institutions. We have a whole delivery that needs to happen. So you see the organization grow, and as a founder CEO, you see your role becomes more and more to say oversee the whole and create the steps forward rather than working in the business.
Interesting. You mentioned working in the business. Okay, so how have you made the leap or the shift from working in the business to working on the business? What are the three maybe key ingredients or three shifts that happened from the early days to now?
I think one of the most essential ones is hire people that are better than you for the things that need to happen. So let's say the first product I oversaw myself. And the moment that we started to grow, I realized that that someone else could do that better. And by that, by doing so, accelerate the business. You create a 1+1 equals 3, because I can focus on what I need to do and someone else can focus on what they need to do. And we both excel at what needs to happen. And so getting the people involved there to do those additional jobs was essential. Now, what you see as well is you learn from what you've done. And I think definitely starting out and anything around the commercial as a CEO, anything around the commercial process, you need to do it first. You need to learn from it before you can instruct other people to do it. You can hire a sales, but if they don't know every fiber of your company or understand the problems of your customer, they're going to have a hard time getting the message across. As the first sales I've done all the way from beginning to end myself, from the last comma in the contracts, been through every single part of it. And because of that, because of the experience you gain from there, you're able to instruct people that will do it after you to do it the Bitik way.
So that's interesting. You mentioned a couple of things there. One is you focused on what you need to do, and others, when they came in, were able to focus on what they needed to do. So how did you split that out? How did you make certain that you stayed in, to coin a phrase, you stayed in your strength zone, and the things that you delegated were items that obviously were playing to other people's strengths?
So I think that the most important thing is we start our assessment on say, hiring new people always with an assessment on values. We got a couple of core values within BITIC, which have defined how we work effectively. And the number one thing for new employees to get on board is to share those values so that the culture remains intact. And then after you have that fit, now you can look at what are strengths and weaknesses of people and how do you shape the roles there. But most important is that by keeping that intact, you're able to divide tasks, knowing that the way people will handle it with specific skills will always be in the way that we want to see it.
Cut to the chase here, because there's a lot of talk about strengths and weaknesses, yeah? And I hear you, but you know, I believe that the way to get the best out of people, and you and I included in that people statement, is giving them the opportunity to really hone in on their strengths. And that's the way to then level up and expand as a person. And also, as importantly, as a company.
Absolutely. So the skills of Grey, we're a company that works predominantly with experience with senior people. We sell to enterprises. Our IT needs to be top notch. Same for security. Same for compliance, regulatory. All that stuff needs to be in place. And there are a lot of skillful people out there. But the ones that will work best, that to bring your company not just one step further, but two or three, are the ones that don't only bring the skills on board, but really work within the organization. One of those values that you spoke about is connection. The people that you work with on a day-to-day basis, you need to be able to connect with them. If the only way of communicating is emails or very formal interactions, you're not going to get the same kind of enthusiasm, the same kind of creativity that you get when there is that connection. And over the past period with lockdowns, we've actually been struggling with that. How do you keep that connection between everyone in the company, something that everyone values, while you need to be remote for most of the time? So that's something we really try to invest in. And you notice the moments that you do get together, there's a different kind of energy and people are more productive, more effective when you have that connection than if there is not.
I mean, so what I'm hearing is, we build on the strengths, but in the middle of the people side of things is connection. And we mentioned at the top of the show that affinity, reality, and communication. We need to have all of these three in play for a collaborative environment, right? Whether it's, I know you mentioned COVID was tough, but whether it's remote or whether it's on-premise, those three need to be working in order for expansion to really happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you dig into, I call it hatting, because you mentioned it. You said, Richard, at the start, I did lots of things. I was a salesman. I was the founder. I was the CEO. I was maybe the product guy. But what it sounds like is you wore a lot of hats. And at a point in time, you figured out that actually I can't wear all these hats because I'm never going to sleep, right? So I need to get an individual or individuals or teams in place to wear a hat, i.e. the product hat or the tech hat. So how did you make certain that when these folk were coming into the business, that they were able to really motor on and move you guys forward from day dot as they joined?
It's interesting because that's something that has changed over time, actually. Yeah. The first people we hired were, say, even though they were hires, they were entrepreneurs. They were people that without, say, having a structure in place, having a clear defined path, one week could be different from the other. You hire people with the attitude to be able to adapt, to change, to pick up things themselves, because you cannot hold their hand when you're just starting up. Actually, they need to be able to do that themselves. And you see that those people actually are sort of the core, the entrepreneurial core of a startup. Then when you move on, we've at some point decided to rigorously implement the entrepreneurial operating system. It's a way to structure the company to deal with your organization, where we really clearly define certain roles. We know that people need to be accountable for specific areas. Once you land a large customer, you cannot have any doubt within the company who's responsible for the relationship, who's responsible for product. There shouldn't be overlap because it creates ambiguity, but there cannot be gaps either. So really defining what is in a role, what is not, and what can you count on someone on, and what needs to be delegated to someone else. Having that very clear has become more and more important. And that leads to the fact that people know what they need to do and then excel at what they have to do.
I like it. I love it, actually. And coming back to communication, there's a way to communicate across the organization because, you know, as you said, you know who's going to pick up the big deal. You know who's going to sort out the issue in the product. You know who's going to pick up the support problems when and if they happen, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I mentioned values before. Ownership is another one we got. And we know that people want to pick things up. And if they're not the ones to execute it, they might be, say, the accountable person and make sure that someone else takes it on. So because of that, let's say that is something which I could say it does help me sleep at night, knowing that, say, we are not an organization where things are left on the table. Actually, there's a sense of ownership, meaning people take things off the table and start executing it. And that's we really see it as an essential part of our DNA.
And you mentioned this sort of the entrepreneurial operating system. I'll be interested to understand how internally you communicate across this system and how that allows you to, again, all move forward together, whether it's a new deal or whether it's a bug fix or whether it's a support issue. I guess, again, there's that slither of communication from top to bottom, from bottom to top. How does that work out with you guys?
We got a couple of different kind of meetings. So there's on the one hand, making sure that, say, a vision is communicated, updates are given about the status of sales, status of fundraising, et cetera. And I mean, we do those in regular company updates where on the one hand, it's sharing from founders to the rest of the team, but also the opportunity for team members to share their learning, share their successes and have this type of setting. I think the more core on the operational level is making sure that we got alignment meetings, predominantly beginning of the week, but also when it's needed throughout. We got one with the entire team on Monday where anything on a company level that needs to be brought up can be discussed. And when, say, an action is determined, someone's assigned and we'll pick it up. The same thing happens on a product level. The same thing happens on a sales level. And we make sure that the ones who need to be there, say, get all the details needed. And then it's clear afterwards, ABC will happen. It will be done by person X, and that's how then the execution happens. So regular alignments with a very clear structure about what needs to be prepared and how will the execution then be done means that the information flows freely and there is always an action related to an issue.
And if we take this external view now, so we looked at sort of the internal communication, internal makeup. If we look externally and we say, okay, how have you approached or how are you approaching that communication to your audience, prospects and customers? Because we know that you mentioned earlier on COVID, we know, and also the adaptability of a team that needs to move forward with the times, but it's the same outside of the organization, right? Outside of the company. So how are you making certain that you tapped into what's happening with your audience, prospects and customers and communicating to them on a consistent basis?
I think it's on two levels. One is sort of the radiating of your message into the world, be it via events, be it via LinkedIn, via blogs, via being, and that's what we did during the first lockdown period as well. Host a webinar. Just make sure that your message is communicated to the outside world. The second is more on a targeted basis. Which individuals within the industry do we need to be connected to? Which partners do we need to align? And specifically, even which decision makers do we need to be in touch with to land specific deals? So on the one hand, you could call it more the branding side, making sure that you are seen and you're heard. And the other side is really targeted, making sure that, say, this awareness that exists of your brand is converted into action.
And how does that play out as a founder and a CEO? Are you out there on video, on webinars, or, you know, is everything driven through you or is it driven through the senior leadership team as a team that has to go out and communicate and engage with, you know, the outside or the external environment?
It's absolutely on different levels. I mean, with our business model, you never sell to a bank. You have always sell to specific people in specific department with specific needs. You might need the CEO to agree on the scope, but without the CTO approvals on the tech, it's not going to happen. That means that whereas our CTO can give credibility on the technology side, I know that I personally cannot because I don't know all the ins and outs. So on the level, that means that you need to have your product people convince the product people. You need to have your technology people convince technology. And even to the point, we're a regulated business. We need to make sure that our risk and compliance is up to par. And that means that our compliance officer is the ones who has to convince the compliance officer on the other side. So all these facets which come into play to get the story across, they need to match. And that means that there is nice talks and vision on the one hand, but there need to be tech workshops as well. And all those levels need to be covered.
I like the word evangelism maybe you can coin a phrase, a leadership evangelism, where you're working as a pack or group or a team of leaders, and you're engaging with different parts of a company or a prospect to enlighten them with your solution that will take them towards their ideal scene. And then that, in doing that, you're not only boosting your brand, but you're creating value. So at a point in time, these prospects can and will potentially buy the tech from you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're active in the open banking space, and it's something that it was kicked off by the PSD2 legislation in Europe, which, although already in 2018, this was enforced in the Netherlands, where we have our home base, it only was put into effect in late 2019. Yeah. All this meantime, we knew what we were going to build, and we were partially building it. But what was even more important was to educate our prospects, yeah, to talk the story, so that when time comes, these companies don't decide in a week whether they're going to buy from you. These are processes of months or even years. Mm. And you need to be there throughout their entire decision-making process, which might be small events, small pitches, just a conversation at an event, which eventually leads to your solution solving their problem. But that's something that takes time and is something that goes all the way throughout the cycle.
So lots of times people come into the show, mention education, educating the market, and I think it's the right thing to do. But I'd love to know what your approach to educating your audience, prospects, and customers has been. I know you mentioned going to events and just being top of mind, but did you look at it methodically and go, okay, we need a little system here. We need to educate our market on X, Y, Z, and this is how we're going to do it. I'd love to get your insights.
We really learned what to communicate by hearing the questions that our prospects had. One of the things we came across, because open banking is all about consumers being able to share their data with third parties. And so the question that we ran into is our prospect saying, yeah, but people are never going to share their data. We don't believe it's going to happen. So then I can sit there and say, yeah, they will. Or look at America, it's happening already. But that's not going to convince them. What we had in our very first years at BITIC, we actually had our own consumer-facing app. And ahead of PSD2, we already created connections to banks and were able to, with marketing, attract some consumers who shared their data. We learned what the data had as value. But also we showed, this is what consumers want, this is what they don't want. And we could back it up with numbers. Yeah. And this is something that then was able to convince the skeptics who say people will not share their data. We were able to show that people actually would share their data. So this is something by becoming very concrete, listening to what are the concerns of the client and how can we tackle them. That's something that really helped us break through sometimes a situation in which you feel stuck.
I could listen, take it in, and then communicate outwards what you think the solution to the problem is, right? So what I call the problem solution framework. And that allows people to make certain that you as a founder, leader in your business, also understand their problems. And you ultimately, we're there to solve their problem, aren't we?
Absolutely. And I have to say, I mean, of course, everyone at BITIC, we dream our story and we love it. But when you put yourself in the shoes of someone at your clients, and then again, the shoes of the compliance officer are different from the shoes of a product owner, and they're looking for different parts of your story. So you need to know who is your audience, understand what their problems are, and then tweak your story, because the same story doesn't apply to everyone in the same company.
And tweak your story again. How as a team have you gone about doing that? Because there's a message, and then there's different individuals that with inside your team that has to obviously link up to the message and then go out and communicate it. What did you do to make certain that this is correctly done and also done consistently, that so that your audience, prospects, and customers knew that you're solving the problem that they wanted you to solve?
I think what's the most important thing we learned is that everyone within the company speaks the same language and understands what it is that we do. And we encountered that a couple of years ago when we had a developer sitting in one room and we had people involved in business development in the other room. And there wasn't enough, say, cross-pollination back and forth. We knew what the product could do, but we didn't know why it could. And we didn't know why we made certain decisions. And it's the other way around as well. People from product, they were building something, not really understanding why we were doing it. And we changed that quite radically about 2 years ago. We said, no, we need to make sure that, say, well, call it product and business, are aligned. So what we now have much more is that since our developers understand what the client wants to see, we've now been able to create demos. So when you're a developer, you create a product, but you don't think about how do I demo this thing. Those are the kind of things which we're now able to integrate. And that means since everyone understands, at least on the level that they need to know from business all the way to the underlying technology, it's possible to tell the same story with a little different accent. But of course, when we need to convince a CTO, that's done by our CTO. And when we need to convince a CCO, it's done by sales. Okay. But still, everyone understands what are the underlying principles on both sides. And that's what I think makes a story strong.
Nice. It's cross-fertilization across business, right?
Absolutely.
Which helps you educate yourselves in the market.
I think for myself as a CEO, if I don't understand, say, within our company, we're working on quite a hardcore technology solution. I cannot write the code. But if I don't understand how the value is created there, it's very difficult to guide a company forward. So it is essential that people have this knowledge about what's going on.
And as you look forward and as you have learned all these lessons, what do you think are the essential ingredients to one, it's a double barrel question, one, making certain that you consistently communicate your message to your market, and two, consistently educate your team so that they can also communicate their message to the market?
Let me start with the second part of your question. But we have internal, we've called it different things. We call it BITIC days, we call it product days, we call it client days. But really, these type of moments where we get, say the entire team together, it's a full day event where we really go through what are the things we hear in the market from, say, the highest level trends that are observed to literally what was said in the customer conversation yesterday and what could that mean for the product. And on the product side, I mean, there are trends as well. They're not just execution, but say developers and our CTO, they're all, say, hearing things in the market, seeing new cool things that, hey, we have these opportunities. Would that work in business? So making sure that there are these at least once a year, these great alignment days in which we understand from each other where it's going. It always leads to new catchphrases, new designs, new ways of bringing things forward. So that's the way in which at least everyone within BITIC always knows the same story. Then you get to the part which we already covered. About that evangelism. That means that you want to go to events, you want to pitch, you want to be in fintech scaling shows and making sure that that the story is heard.
Nice. Good name drop. I like it. What's maybe the one or two things that you would recommend to a founder or leader out there that is on their journey of scaling and they are starting to communicate outwards? What's the one thing that you think that they should think about as they start that? And this could be either professionally related or personally related.
I think what is very important is the consistency of what it is you communicate. So if it is about cost saving, make sure that it is about cost saving and not about cool new features or compliance. And make sure that it's consistent, make sure it's tweaked to your audience. But maybe even more so than, and that's, I think, not just specific to financial industry, but we do encounter it a lot. It's not only about what you say, but there is a lot about how you say it and who says it. We've been in conversations where you notice having someone with gray hairs in the room helps you get the story across, even if they don't speak. This is just how things work. So it's really important that it's not only about what the message is, but what channels you use and what people you have explaining that story for you. Because the network and the experience, these things are equally, if not more important than that fantastic product that you have.
Yeah, and I'll double you on that. I think consistency is 100% the key here. And, you know, as you move forward and you look, I know we've spoken about vision, but you look over the next 12 months, what questions are you asking yourself and your leadership team? And what factors are you taking in to make certain that you continue to expand?
I think it's on the one hand, making sure that we grab the opportunities in, say, the smartest way, because we're looking to expand from the Netherlands into Europe, meaning what are the differences between, say, moving to Germany, moving to France? What are the networks that you need to tap into, and making sure that we take, say, the quickest route to market. At the same time, scaling tends to come with growth pains. How do you make sure that the internal organization is able to go along with this new growth path that you've embarked on? And we see that as you grow, say, the regulatory requirements, they start to grow. Your platform needs to be able to scale. Your organization needs to be able to scale. You might have to deal with an office that's located in a different location than your headquarters. How do you manage that? So on the one hand, it's having a clear strategy on where we're going to go, how are we going to conquer that market. Yeah. At the same time, making sure the organization doesn't fall apart while you're at it.
Nice. Some good things to aim for then. As leaders, we always continue to grow ourselves. We have to always look at ourselves and be self-aware, right? So I'd like to know from you, what are you doing right now, maybe every day, every month, every week, to self-educate? So what podcasts are you listening to? What YouTube channels maybe do you follow? Or even books are you reading right now that you think are useful for you, have been useful for you, and would be useful for our listeners going forward?
Interesting question. It's something, I know for myself, I've taken actually since the beginning of this year, making sure that every Wednesday morning, I don't work on any operational things. I block my agenda. And that's the time when I say, okay, this is when I try to listen to podcasts, not a specific show, except for certain fintech scaling shows. But in general, when I look at what are inspiring people in the industry, CEOs that just made an exit, they tend to tell their story somewhere or do a little bit of background research into how did this specific company do this specific thing. Yeah. I like reading as well. And then things not necessarily too specific on just what is happening in fintech. Those are things that you hear out there in general. Yeah. But I'd like things to put things in a broader perspective as well. So what is the role of technology within the world? Yeah. Things about how are the big four or five tech companies, like Facebook, Amazon, Apple, are they sort of reshaping how people interact. And that's not necessarily something that you will be able to apply tomorrow and we're going to run our business differently. But I think we need to be aware that, say, we are part of a faster changing world and be able to understand what is happening, even if it's not directly applicable tomorrow. I like to be more aware of what's happening in society beyond just your specific domain.
Yeah, I mean, some salient points, excellent points. And as we wrap up the show, how can folk get in touch with you or the team at Boutique?
Well, in any case, through the website, there's a contact form, but say we're very active on LinkedIn. It's really sort of the place where we communicate to the outside world, but also internal. Anyone at the company is always happy to receive messages from people interested, be it with something concrete, be it with something just to spar. I think the best opportunities and the best hires we've made have been those which were not trying to close someone right away, but drink a coffee and find out what it is that you can do together. And maybe that only happens in 2 or 3 years from now. In any case, our contact details are to be found there, and we'd be happy to get in touch.
Awesome, mate. Brilliant to have you on the show today. And we touched on some really interesting nuggets here. So to all our listeners, I think it's worthwhile maybe listening to this show a couple of times, because it's going to help you as you move towards your ideal scene and start communicating and using the channels to communicate your message out there. So, mate, really awesome show. Loved having you on it, and looking forward to watching your growth and your story evolve over the next little while.
Thanks for having me, Richard.